Student Assembly, October 12th, 2006.
Come here, little boy. Oh.
I think it's time to take your seat. You don't have to bring
that nerve. That's when you have people like that, they use my
seat. Yeah, the meeting go.
All right. We're having a little conference.
Because people are like, we're still having a conference. So I'm like, that's our next one.
That's what I heard.
Nothing was everywhere.
All right. Find somebody.
This meeting is called to order at 4:48 p.m.
All right.
Okay. Clerk, please call the roll.
Members of the Student Assembly, if you have anything you'd like to bring to the table that is not currently on the agenda, we invite you to do so now. All right, we'll appreciate it. All right, now we're going to move on to announcements and reports. And we're going to go to VP Slickland.
Yeah, a minute.
Okay, we're going to go ahead and approve last week's minutes. Go ahead and look over those.
Motion to approve.
Second.
Is there dissent? All right, the minutes stand approved unanimously. Now we move on to announcements and reports. And starting out with a PR update from VP Slickland.
Hi, everyone. We had the first coffee with the dean in the hotel school on Wednesday. It went really well. If any of you would like to do something similar in your own constituency, I'd be more than willing to help. Homecoming is on Saturday. We still need people to help collect in the first half. And there was an editorial in the Sun, if you didn't catch it. We co-wrote it with the Greek community and class council, so check it out.
All right, and then we'll now move over real quickly to VP Boxer for an announcement about appropriations.
So as you guys know, I had asked everyone to take the President and Treasurer's test, not in resolution form, but I had asked you guys to do it because we were supposed to have SASB appeals come before us next Thursday. It's actually going to be in 2 Thursdays, so you have a little bit more time if you haven't done it already and want to do so. Appropriations is going to be here in all of the SASB appeals this Monday, but Kwame's going to announce what we're doing next week and why we're clearing the agenda. So just so that you know, we're doing that in 2 weeks, not next week.
Okay, next week we have an excited meeting, at least I think so. President Swartz is coming, and he's asked us to set aside the agenda so we can just have an open discussion with him. So come prepared for questions, and it should be a good time. All right. Next, I think we have VP Greenberg with an early decision, discussion from the board.
For the sake of time, I'm not going to discuss all the details of our meeting yesterday with Doris Davis, the Vice Provost for Admissions and Enrollment at Cornell. It was a very informative meeting. We went there about an hour and a half yesterday in Day Hall. I believe that most of the representatives that came, and I think there were about 16 or 18 people present in the room, did have most of their questions answered. So what I'm going to be doing is I'm going to be compiling a lot of my notes and notes of other representatives that were there, putting into a single document, sending out over the listserv so that everybody understands what we actually discussed in the meeting. After the meeting today, we're going to be going into closed session. We need to elect amongst ourselves a very informal liaison to the Vice Provost for Admissions and Enrollment. This person is going to be working with her for the remainder of the semester, dealing specifically with the early decision debate. She's very enthusiastic about working with the students. She wants student dialogue. She made it very clear that the administration wants student dialogue as well. And she very much appreciated that the assembly came forward, stepped up, and kind of took this role amongst ourselves, upon ourselves, rather. So any questions, just throw them my way.
I'm still going to direct all questions to Elon through email. We're trying to get to Mayor as quickly as possible. I just want to make a quick comment about that meeting. What made it so successful was that so many members took time out of their schedules to come, and that's exactly what we need. It was a great meeting we had, I think. How many people? Ten people there?
More,
16 people there, and most of us were from the SA, and that's exactly what we need, so thanks a lot. Next, we have VP Coons with Fire Prevention.
All right, guys, this is fairly straightforward. You'll notice I included in the attachments this week a little proclamation by President Bush. Just a reminder that this week is Fire Prevention Week. Cornell has had some tragedies in its past, recent past, actually, in regards to this. And I wanted to just bring this to everybody's attention, and also, you know, that this is a this is also a week to just appreciate and honor firefighters across the United States and what have you. So if you'll just take a look at that, included for that reason.
Okay, thanks. Are there any other announcements or reports? Okay, on to business of the day. We have the mayor here today, Carolyn Garrison. That's the microphone, please. I'm going to have Sarah introduce her because she's doing much better than I can.
Okay, well, I think that most of you have mentioned the announcement that Mayor Peterson is with us today for a very just low-key, informal question and answer. We really thought that this would be a great week. We had noticed over the summer that there hadn't really been a dialogue in us quite a few years between the mayor and the student assembly, and we really think that this is a great way to get the ball rolling on some more town and gown initiatives. I know that a lot of you have approached me because I've worked on a lot of common council committees and different projects over the past 4 years, but I'm graduating, and I hope that everyone else gets involved with all of the college town initiatives that are going on. I know that people have questions about community service things. We can get involved with local politics, just really any questions that you have about things that are going on off campus, really, and in the rest of our community. So I don't know if Mayor Peterson, you have anything that you'd like to sort of start off, any initiatives that you'd like to discuss or open up the floor, and then I think that we can just take some questions and have this sort of run kind of normally. But thank you very much for coming today.
Can you hear me all right with this? Is this close enough? So good afternoon, everybody. I had a chance before the meeting started to just greet a few of you. But I'm really pleased to be here. And I told Sarah this is like our first day meeting, which means that I think we'll anticipate some more of this because as mayor, there are many formal connections with Cornell University, but there really isn't one with the student assembly. And I think this is a very good idea. It could be something on a regular basis or with some of your subcommittees that are issue-oriented to things that are affecting both the city and the university and especially people that live off-campus and other activities throughout the city. I always have to say I'm the first female mayor in the city. It's something that I'm really happy about and proud about. And it's a four-year term and I'm coming to the end of 3 years. Got a lot of that time under my belt now. I did serve on the city council. I was first elected 23 years ago in 1983. I represented the 5th Ward, which includes the North Campus area, the Dunhill area, Fall Creek. And
and I served in that community for 8 years. Then I moved to Lower Buffalo Street on the Hill, where I live now, and then ran for 2 years to serve in Cowshaw community, and then ran for mayor. So I have different experiences in different neighborhoods and issues around the university. Some of the formal connections that I have is monthly meetings with several, I guess they're all vice presidents and community relations folks at the university and city council members, and we meet every month and try to talk about issues of interest for the city and Cornell. There's also a regular meeting with people talking about future and continual economic development initiatives with the university and the city. Those are ongoing as well. And I have recently started in the last few months a countywide affordable housing, housing may be of interest to everyone here, the affordable housing group, talking about the issue of the price of housing here, especially for those of the lowest income in our community, and the lack of housing, and how many people who work at the university, for example, who have to travel from even other counties. Our nighttime population is about 100,000 in the county, and 120,000 during the day of people coming outside the area to work here. That's another formal connection with the university who sits at that table as well. So I'm really happy to be here with more of this connection with the students. And as you know, I'm sure, that it's only been in recent years that students have run for and been elected to the city council, the common council, the city government. And so that has been a new, and it shouldn't have been a surprising change in city government, especially on the fourth ward around the university, which is a heavily student population, and that makes a lot of sense to have student representation in a formal way in the city government. And as Sarah mentioned, there are other ways as well, like the College Town Vision Task Force, for example, the College Town Neighborhood Council, and other boards and committees in the city that has openings for people who live in the community to serve. We have students serve on our Youth Bureau Commission, for example, students who volunteer at GM and Southside and other organizations in the community. So I'm very informal today, and I would, if you give and take questions, that is absolutely fine with me. I, in the city of Ithaca, there's no city manager, no city administrator. The city, the mayor is the CEO of the city. I directly supervise the heads of the 13 departments in the city, so it's a very hands-on job as mayor, in addition to being the chair of the Common Council, running the business meetings of the Common Council as well, and the chair of the Board of Public Works. So the mayor has a very diverse job and many hours a week working on it. So if you have questions or statements, I'm fine with that if you want to just have a conversation.
Okay, now we'll take some questions. Then towards the end of this discussion, I would encourage audience members, if you have questions, to ask them too. Okay, who's first? Liaison, go for it.
Myself and put that task force together, and we were several months late in getting started and getting organized, which was in people's arms to find someone who would chair a meeting. That's always a hard job. But at the last meeting that I attended, it had been divided into various subject areas that broken off into focus groups to talk about various areas of concern with College Town, such as parking or housing, and what kind of uses are most important to that neighborhood, and safety issues, for example. And I hope that in the next 4 to 6 weeks, that vision will be in a form that will be presented to the Common Council. What we have done, a couple of other vision statements recently for other parts of the city, so it was important to get that outline and the recommendations very clear, and then present that to the Council with chief items that what I think will probably happen, what can be implemented better quickly and are easy to do, parts that need more study, things that may be further down the road. But the important part really is how does the community, the student community, the resident community, the academic community, the workforce look at how it's shown, how it is now and what it can be. For those of us who have lived here for a long time, we've seen Kalashan really evolve. It's a very different neighborhood now than it was 25 years ago. And also about 25 years ago is when the biggest changes occurred. So Kalashan's getting a little worse for wear around some of the infrastructure, lack of parking, and those are things that are important for us to look at. But rather than having city government officials to make all those decisions, it was important to hear from various groups what the best approach to how it
should be. Representative Sell. I just wanted to know if you could tell us some of the city's priorities for this year, for one of the coming years, things that might be less or might not. You mentioned affordable housing. Are there any other big initiatives you're trying to focus on so we can be aware of things that might come in?
Sure, I'll try to keep away from the budget. The mayor's budget was due October 1st, and the first budget meeting starts tomorrow. So in a way, that's a perspective one can use looking at the priorities, because some of them are funded in the budget. So affordable housing in general is definitely one aspect. There's a particular project that I'm very interested in, which is also part of our vision statement, called the Southwest Vision Statement, which is about 60 acres that the city owns in the Walmart Home Depot area. There's a lot of empty land behind that area. And previous administration was looking at that area for additional commercial development. I wanted it to be reopened and looked at possible housing. And so the vision, I didn't attend any of the vision meetings because I wanted a community group to make that decision. I didn't want to influence it. And the report that came out did suggest that there could be a new neighborhood created. The city down there has almost 600,000 units, which is quite a bit. Looking at that as a sustainable green neighborhood with green building technique, orientation of buildings for solar, and small neighborhood stores, so it's not competitive with the downtown, for example, stores that coffee shops or newspaper stands to support the needs of the neighborhood, and also looking at alternative transportation modes. So in a nutshell, it also covers the size of housing issues, the issues of sustainability that are really important to me and the administration. I got my start in local politics and environmental issues in the late 70s here in Ithaca, when we had a great deal of concern about radioactive waste transportation through the city of Ithaca. Our topography was very interesting when we thought of the transportation going through the area. And these are additional extensions of my concerns with the environment. And the sustainability issues are also key to my administration. That is rather extensive, not only to what the city of Ithaca can do as a municipality. Last year, we purchased, for example, our first fleet vehicle, our first hybrid vehicle, in the 2007 budget was in an electric vehicle. And taking small steps as we move forward in sustainability initiatives. Also, a member of the climate protection through WIGLI, which is the National Coalition for Local Environmental Initiatives. And that is an organization that gives mayors tools to address greenhouse gas emissions, because we feel the federal government is not taking those steps. So I've been very active in that area as well. Economic development is very important for the city of Ithaca, and continuing to follow the trend of good urban core development and appropriate density for our downtown is an area that we're working on. Small upstate cities struggle in New York State. Many of them, you'll see their downtowns are empty. We've been doing well and it's still working very hard and keeping it together so much talking. So please shop there. Very important to us too to keep that initiative strong for economic development. And another area is transportation. I've been working through what I call the Healthy City Initiative. Ithaca has the highest walk-to-work ratio of any city in New York State. There's 40% of people who walk to work, and school, the university level is included in that. So you all, I'm sure, are contributing to our high percentage. So that is another area that is important for both sustainability and cutting down the amount of cars and traffic and the pedestrian uses in our community. So working on that as well. And then in the side of issues of race issues and youth violence is a new initiative that we're working on with the DA and the police chief, and that will be an ongoing issue. Gangs and violence, are there gangs in Ithaca, and are they operating or not, and what is the extent of youth violence and how are we going to manage that in our community? Probably a longer answer than you anticipated.
Thank you. Vice President Greenberg.
There's actually a number of locations on campus right now where we can get the Ithaca Times, so it's pretty good because Cornell students can kind of get a sense of what's going on, you know, on a community level and whatnot. And I remember reading an article recently, like signs that Ithaca is picking up. It was like a outlook for the coming year. And one of the things was the departure of a former Cornell president. And I thought that was interesting that the Ithaca community, despite all the things that are going on the community level, is still paying attention to Cornell so closely. Now, as SA representatives, we try to take a role sometimes as investigators, as advocates of particular causes and whatnot. From your perspective, what do you think right now is like the biggest weakness in Cornell's relationship with the Ithaca community? What is Cornell not doing well? What can we improve upon? And if there is something, how as students can we get involved in that issue?
Well, one issue that comes to mind, because I just wrote a brief email to a student at the Daily Sun thanking her for an article that she wrote a week or two ago. She departed from writing about Cornell. She wrote about community issues and how she views the community and things that are fun to do and activities to attend. Yes, this is. And I just sent her an email just last night or the night before. And that is an area that I would really like to strengthen. And I can give you some small examples. One shortcoming that we had identified, and we've sent our speaker shoppers up to take tours with incoming students that are given throughout the campus to see how the community is represented in those tours. And the Office of Community Relations certainly helped with that as well. And that was really valuable for us to see. One area we really would like to strengthen when people are here for four very important years of their lives is to strengthen the sense of community between the university, the students, and our small city. And some people like the small city, some people can't stand it and just want to get out every weekend. So we're looking for ways to strengthen that, to show people what's good about the city that's there and how we can relate better with the university in that respect. And I think you have a new president, and I've had a couple meetings with him and getting to know each other, and that's one area that I think is important, that when people are here for 4 years, that our community showcase, and that what can we do as a community. Because I'm pretty sure students, when you come in, you're not just looking at the university. I would imagine you're looking at the setting in which the university is located. So to have that synergy between the two entities is very important. So that's one area that comes to mind.
Hi, Representative. Thanks again for coming. We spoke just now about building a sense of community, and I think a great way Cornell students can help do that is by participating in philanthropy and charity events. What philanthropies and charities in Ithaca do you think need help and that we need volunteers, and where else can Cornell students get involved in the community?
Well, I think one, we chose the Human Services Coalition, which is kind of a clearing house for dozens and dozens of human services that. Everything from food service to working with seniors to working with hunger to working with youth, and that would be an excellent place. They have a great website. You can get on the listserv and send out information every day. There's something new that comes out. And I mentioned earlier about our board and committee. There's also, though we don't have numerous opportunities, but there can be very close relationships with individuals with interns in office for either for your coursework or for something you might be interested in. So I'll put in the plug for sustainability again. For example, I had an intern earlier this year who worked with me with sustainability projects. We always need help, because so many of us are of a certain age with computers and our web page and our bringing the city higher and higher into the electronic world. And that's always a good link with younger people as well. And I just had confirmation this month. I hope I get the name right. It's Into the Streets.
Mm-hmm.
And supported that. And that was at the Common Council meeting, so it was on television. And students came and accepted that proclamation and had an opportunity to address the community, saying, here we are, and we're here to volunteer, and we can always use more sites. So that we can help improve the community in such a variety of ways. And then personally, both the South Tech Center, GX, and the Youth Bureau are always looking for help in those organizations that work with young people. And young people really look up to people of your age. There's just often a very nice relationship. You're not old enough to be a parent. I mean, you are, but there's somebody named you. They're old enough to be their parent. You know, there's a gap, such as grandchildren often are better with their grandparents than their own parents. So it's just a real nice relationship. I'm sure many of you have younger brothers and sisters, and you probably understand how people look up to, the younger people look up to people of your age. So that's a good one, too.
It's about 5:14 now. I'm not sure what time you need to leave. Okay. Also, all right. Also, I encourage members of the community to ask questions. Vice President Boxer.
I just actually have a question that I wasn't really going to ask, but I guess just stemming from you were just talking about interns, and I have a question about something that I've just been hearing about, and I think Kwame also for the last couple of years, but I don't really know exactly how grounded this is. That in terms of landlord issues in college town, and hopefully trying to get a more cohesive message out to the student body about, you know, what are safe places to live, maybe ratings of landlords, different places, different housing units in the past that have been they're safe, really maybe don't have great reputations. It's sort of my understanding, this is like an urban legend, that there are basically boxes sitting in City Hall somewhere of records of landlord evaluations or some sort of prior landlord rating system or something like that are all in print, and that basically in order for those to sort of be publicized in any way or to sort of come together as some sort of actual program that could help Cornell students out, you basically need interns or work study students or something like that to come down to City Hall and basically get this stuff online. It sounds like a great idea, and it's something that I've sort of heard about in bits and pieces, and it's just in terms of landlord issues and dealing with stuff like that, do these records exist?
Building Department is a focus of mine for 2007. The Building Department needs to be, again, referred to the electronic age, needs to be updated. They're not in boxes, but they are in files. Mm-hmm. There are files, paper files on every property in the city. You have a right as a citizen to go into the files, stop in, write down what property you want to look at, and you're allowed to look at the files. So you can look at, you know, if you're looking at something to rent, you can go in there and you can see at least what kind of building complaints or what building records being existed. But that is a very labor-intensive and difficult way to get that information. In the 2007 proposed budget, I do have an $80,000 request for software for that department to start getting that material into an electronic form. And also, there's been an unfunded mandate from New York State to change the number of years by which we inspect properties and to add certain properties to the inspection cycle. So the building department is being hit pretty hard right now. They need some extra employees as well as the software. The once those issues are settled, I feel that the building department has so much happening right now, so much reorganization that needs to be done. Then, after that has started, I think that would be something that would be helpful for people to enter data. Right now, the building department's draft and just having someone to manage interns to understand what to do was stressful for the building commission. We're also often behind in certificates of compliance and certificates of occupancy, so the software should help improve that as well. And it's been a target department for 2007 to improve that. But that came out. Were you on the other task force also that made its recommendations? But that certainly was one of them to have that ability, hopefully online, typing an address and see what the history was of that particular property. And
right.
It is important. I used to represent the ward in around college town housing, and the first time I was door to door, and I an advocate of strong door to door, and going into some of the buildings, it just completely surprised me with ceilings falling down, debris in the staircases, light fixtures hanging by wires, and people probably standing in line to get a rental there, and we really need to improve that.
Great.
I actually had a comment about that. I'm planning on taking a field trip down to City Hall to see those records next week, so if anybody would like to come with me, then just email me, let me know. I assume nobody else would want to go since, you know, it was a tedious walk and or drive, so. But if you'd like to go, also just let me know.
Come visit me,
and
I'm on the same floor as the
building. Sure. Exchange cell numbers.
I'm not sure if you're going to really be able to answer this question, but I'm one of the volunteers that, as you mentioned before, at GX, and I was just wondering why the funding for the Bell Sherman Elementary After School program was cut, because I also wanted to volunteer there.
The school?
The
Bell
Sherman
School? That's a school district of a separate entity from the city government. In some communities, it's one of the same. But in the city of Ithaca, we have our government, the GS, the Youth Bureau, and the school district has its own board and its own taxing entity. So I suspect that would be a school district question.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Lavin.
I was wondering if you could provide any information on the issue of growth violations and the recently, correct me if I'm wrong, I might have been misinformed, the recently new noise ordinance that was, I guess, took effect, I'm not sure if it's a Thompson County thing or a City of Ithaca statute, whether it's being discussed in any of the task forces, committees, or the council at all, whether it's on the agenda or anything. I just know this in particular, I've heard a lot in dialogue about this, and I know a lot of college town residents are being affected, as well as other residents. So, any information on that issue?
The new noise ordinance is a couple years old at least, and the town of Ithaca has a new ordinance that they just created. And sometimes that's confusing for people because the city of Ithaca, and we're surrounded by the town of Ithaca, which has its own town government and town supervisor and its own set of rules and regulations. There's a lot of history behind the noise ordinance and its changes. I'll start on a positive note, which I think that the complaints, at least in my office, about noise have been reduced. but I had an interesting experience earlier this fall when I went to the College Town brunch at the 9, and then went to that very same day IC had their brunch in the South Hill neighborhood, and several students from both campuses asked me the same question about this and the noise they were experiencing. Group of students at Ithaca College, and I don't know if they were exaggerating or not, but they said that they feel that they can't even watch a football game in their living room, and if their team gets a goal, they feel all they can do is do this. So that really stuck in my mind. That interesting. I've actually passed that case on to the police department to see if that really doesn't happen as long as they get tickets for noise. So I would say that we are stricter in the last few years with the noise violations, the noise ordinance. The main change, as you may know, in the noise ordinance is that the police may issue tickets without the complaint, and that's a big change, just as they do, say, for speeding or other violations that they observe. That would give a ticket, and that has happened with the noise ordinance. We certainly are concerned with following up complaints where people feel unwarranted arrest. I have talked to the police chief to get information about the actual handcuffs can be brought down to the station versus being given an appearance ticket. Those are very different things towards just handing a ticket for actually being taken down for in handcuffs. So I have regular meetings with the police chief. And trying to follow through on those understanding on my part when that is applied when someone is brought down to the station as opposed to giving a ticket. And understanding if there is consistency, if someone's given a warning versus a ticket versus an arrest, and how those are applied in different cases. I did attend the Neighborhood Association meeting in the Bell Sherman area. First question there turned out not to be a question, but a thank you from a long-time resident of the neighborhood behind College Town. Thank you, city, for this past August, September, was one of the quietest she had ever experienced. So have we tipped the balance the other way? You know, we came out of a very difficult time, even to the point. It had gotten so bad where bottles were being drawn to police officers. And so that happened and had to stop. And also, the city's resources are stretched at certain times of year where we have additional police, additional fire service that cost the city tens of thousands of dollars when there are events that are very large and can pose sometimes danger to the party goers and students themselves, so as to make sure people are safe. And so I am aware of concerns about the noise ordinance and how strictly it's been applied. I think the university and it's the college, if it's college, it has come to this a little later, but Cornell administration has worked on this for a while, especially during senior week at the beginning of the school year, having activities on campus that hopefully are appealing to students who then it takes some of the pressure off of the neighborhood issues and the noise violations and so on. So this is something that I'm aware of and continuing to observe. There's nothing at the moment that I'm aware of in the process through the city council, but if you have concerns, you let me represent them.
Vice President Coombs.
I know the city has a lot of task forces and committees where students are able to play a pretty big role. I know Sarah is very involved. But of course, we're a very transient kind of community. It's after 4 years, we usually take off. And I know your committees and the task forces will lose people like Sarah. How is the city able to, it seems like you can y'all be playing catch up all the time. You have these really knowledgeable students who then leave, and then even if there's interested students, they get in there and they're brand new. How does the city account for that, and is that ever really a major problem?
So many of the task force generally has a time frame, often less than a year, to get something, a specific task completed. So that shouldn't be a problem. many of the boards have anywhere from 2 to 3 year term, so you may be serving one term, for example. I think sometimes the hardest thing is those of you who work with younger people and the attachments that are created with young people to their mentors. That's probably one of the hardest relationships. But I think our community understands, because it's not just the students who are transiting, there's many graduate students as well, and TAs and professors that come and go a lot in the community as well. And there's people like myself, my family came here, and my husband was a graduate student at Cornell, and many of us who just never left. We came in 1974, and that's very common as well. But I think if you are working in a group, for example, or an organization on campus that looks at philanthropy, there's, I think, enough of succession planning and discussion so that new students who are coming in, freshmen or sophomores, learn from the junior group seniors a little bit about the community. So I think that works too.
Representative Taylor.
Oh no, there's only one.
I just want to begin by thanking you for coming again and visiting us for such a good period of time. Look forward to a future date. I wanted to ask you a question about does the city have jurisdiction or I guess in charge of what's going on with the North Campus Bridge right now?
Yes.
I'm wondering, I've heard a lot of stuff about people from people who live here over the summer, and there was students who lived here over the summer, that the North Campus Bridge was open, there was really no work on it during the summer. And yet, like right now in the prime time of university, and then during, from what I hear, on March 1st, it's going to be reclosed again the way it is right now. And these are like, families where students like need to go to class, and this is a very important bridge, for most students who are on North Campus, which is a lot of students.
Yes.
So I'm just wondering, what happens in terms of not doing stuff over the summer? And then two, is there any way that this plan be shortened and/or/ changed in such a way that most of the work is done when we are away, and that the bridge is open when we're on winter break and then closed when we're back here?
Well, I believe, and I'm going to turn to Judy for this also. I believe there is a regular city and Cornell group that meets about the construction of the bridge that tries to make decisions together on what the best timing is. And there's all kinds of other issues that are around that, too. Other events are happening inside the school year as well. I can't remember exactly what month the work started on the bridge, but it was in general agreement with the university in trying to figure out the schedule. And the other issue that involves is emergency services and safety. The fire department is very concerned about that bridge and roads being open. The fire department would prefer also to have one lane open at all times, but then the work gets extended much longer, and you make a decision on the balance of keeping the lane open and the work project goes on much longer, or shutting it down at times and getting a lot more work done. So that has also contributed to that decision. It's my understanding that it is in the city the most heavily biked and walked on bridge in the city of Ithaca. It is our bridge. It's the most expensive bridge project the city has ever done. $10 million. We have federal and state assistance for that. The city paid 5% toward that bridge. But any input you have on timing would be important to the regular meetings that happen between the city and the Cornell. I don't know, Rudy, if you may I invite someone else to respond if you have a response?
Sure.
A lot of work went on this summer. It just wasn't really visible. get that part of the bridge stabilized, so the large elements, which are delivered about 2 weeks ago. And when those new arches came in, they're going to be the main support structures for the new wider way to allow more pedestrians, more bicyclists to go across it safely. That necessitates a complete shutdown because that's the major part of the work. What we did was the mayor's office very closely to keep it open for the first year students came back, and obviously the reunion and graduation plan. The good news is, I guess, they worked quietly. They didn't see them working down the road. They weren't everybody's way.
Okay. Representative Ehrlich.
I actually also have a comment on a question. I don't know if there's any way that I can talk to my dad so that I can speak to the community. I know that I've had a lot of people come to me. I actually was working at the house, and I've had some interesting experiences, and I know many of my fellow working campus residents have with the alternate route to Central Campus. I know that there's one technical detour, which is the footbridge over Ruby Lake.
You're talking about pedestrian driving.
Yeah, pedestrian. But I know that a lot of people, including I live to the suspension bridge, and that's a really dangerous route on the dark. I mean, I've been hit by cars many, many times. There's no sidewalk. I mean, I need some sort of perhaps some sort of temporary lighting. I mean, I don't really know the logistics of it or the options, but I think that North Campus residents are going to continue to take it as well, and I think it is. You're responsible
to,
I think it's about engagement. Thank you.
I have a quick question, too, actually. That reminded me of something. Last week, someone, I can't remember their name, maybe someone else in China, it was a community member. They came and they were talking about how the bike routes, the paint is faded. Would that be something Cornell takes care of, or is that, it's not clear in the university charter whether or not Cornell would take care of it?
These are on-campus bike routes?
Yeah, on-campus bike routes. I believe those on-campus bike routes, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's fully Cornell's responsibility.
Okay. Representative Ginn.
Hi, Mayor Peterson. I have just a quick follow-up question of verification on Northern Institute. You responded earlier on. I've spoken with Sheriff Russell about like his deputies and maids at the Stone event and how to respond to that. But under what circumstances do you recommend the police chief or did he say that I should be arrested to the place of taking them down as opposed to just issuing them a ticket? And would you support and do you support him or actually physically arrest the citizens?
Well, it's her.
Oh, it's her.
So just and my understanding is, you know, when we get complaints about the event, I want to know why. Usually the extenuating circumstances could be pushing, shoving, arguing, not answering, yelling, those kinds of things may cause an arrest. Or refusal to show ID, saying they don't have an ID. So that's some kind of the circumstances that may cause taking them down to the station instead of issuing a parent ticket. That's some of the reasons. And I'm sorry, did you have a second question?
Well, my second question, was what actual responsibility or authority do you have to make recommendations to for her regarding her actions that can instruction for officers to either arrest somebody or issue a ticket? Like at a very generic level, when she instructed me to go out and even something. What level of authority do you have to tell them to leave you, to tell them yes, to let people who know it's a different type of person?
I suppose I have quite a bit of authority. I haven't exercised my authority on any departments in particular in that way. But I suppose I would ultimately have that kind of authority, especially over the police, by charter, city charter.
Parliamentary Asbury.
Hi, my name is Lincoln. I've noticed this year I brought my car to campus, and I haven't been going to the university up the hill like where it hits up the Thursday just because the bridge has been closed, so I've been driving over Stewart a lot because it's Institute Avenue Bridge, and in reading about the budget proposed to the city, the mayor's budget, I'm wondering, does any of it account for like fixing the roads? Because University Avenue, especially that part that goes from where West Campus is to Thurston, especially part of Stewart Avenue between where the
I know what you mean. You don't have to
say that. Yeah, University and Buffalo, like those areas. Right. Maybe those are campaign issues in the elections last year or in the past year. So it's been an issue of Cornell doesn't have a jurisdiction, but not Cornell's roads, technically. Is that correct? And if so.
Are you talking about University itself?
University is Stewart. But those are the ones that I know probably have the most problem issues with there, in my opinion.
I'll try to do a very quick nutshell history of the budget for the city of Ithaca from 1991 or so, when state aid was cut significantly for cities in New York State, and that caused quite a bit of reduction in the workforce, especially in the facilities. The workforce that saw one of the biggest reductions, and then additionally over the years since 1991. In order not to lay off additional people, the city capitalized the road repair expenses. So the employees were working only on large capital projects, and the operational and maintenance aspects of road repair were let go and let go and let go. So just before my administration in 2003, the prior mayor started and I've been continuing and expanding it. Move much of the work back to the operational budget so we're not capitalizing the work. And also, our superintendent of streets and facilities has proposed a 5-year additional amount of about $300,000 each year for 5 years above the budget to try to catch up on some of these road issues. It's very hard to make those corrections very quickly because the city of Ithaca is the second highest city in New York State on tax exempt property. Our city is about 70% tax exempt, so it is a real hardship in collecting taxes and making big changes because of the way the tax exempt structure is set up. And a lot of that is just in our university, is a great deal of the tax exempt reason. So we are doing a little bit more in 2007 than we did in 2006, but the proposal is a 5-year plan, so it's going to take years to catch up, and even after that 5 years, it's still not there completely. The goal is to get back onto a normal plan of streets and road repair. It's good for us to do about 6 or 7 miles of repair each year, and that's the schedule we'd like to get back to. But I'm very aware of the road and problems. You'll notice on University Avenue that some capital repairs happened along curves there. So if you put that on a bike or catch your tire and it's coming downhill down the community, followers know something quite bad. And that's starting to be built in. We have been doing tons and tons of asphalt traffic hole repair every day in the last week. Asphalt plant closes in November. We've got a lot to do to catch up. We're very aware of it. We don't like it either.
The university is in the city of Ithaca as well? University Avenue.
University Avenue is a tricky question, but University Avenue is from downtown and up to Stewart Avenue and then up to basically art museum. And historically, the city has been repairing that portion of the road. And then we have different opinion with the mayor up to the Thurston Avenue Bridge, but that's going to be repaired on our list. We're working with the university and figuring out the ownership and maintenance of that portion of the university. And
quick question, if someone sees a repair that needs to be made or they'd like to be made, who can they contact?
In the white page, there's pothole phone number. Potholes are listed. And you can always call my office as well. My assistant takes those messages on a regular basis as the city clerk's number. And my number is 274-6501 and the city clerk is 274-6570.
Thanks. Representative Butish.
Thank you very much, Mayor. I was just wondering, I know that Cornell is working on the master plan for the university, and I was wondering if they've been including the city of Ithaca in that, how closely Cornell and Ithaca have been working together, and if Ithaca has its own master plan, and how they're going to be integrated. Also, if there are any other specific projects that are being worked on, I know you said you're focusing on economic development, and so I was wondering if there are any other projects that you would like to look at.
Well, the city has been pleased with the work of the master plan and have had opportunities to meet with consultants on numerous occasions, and they've also come to the College Town Vision Task Force meeting and have met with other neighborhoods and other municipalities that are around the university. And we've been impressed with this particular firm, and we have had a good relationship as far as that master planning is occurring. The city has a master plan as well. Something that I think we need to work on is last comprehensively looked at in the 70s, and then changes have been made and indebted to the plan, and it's time to look at it again as a whole. Some additional projects that are important to the city is the waterfront trail area and other trail systems throughout Temple County and throughout the city. We have some federal funding to extend our trail a couple more miles. There's been a dream of a trail for about 30 years that would go from approximately the Buttermilk Falls area, the Home Depot and Walmart area, all the way out to Tegana Falls, and other connections to the town of Ithaca, get back to the South Hill Recreation Way. So that's another project that would be really wonderful if that would occur. Something you may not be terribly interested in, but it's interesting to us, and it's also 25 years since it's been done, is dredging our flood control channel. Both are with the keel to get stuck in the mud, and also it's for flood purposes in the Erie Canal Corporation, Governor Towns, the Ithaca area on the top of the lift, and that has been something that we've been working on recently as well.
It's about 5:45 now.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you so much for coming. That was great. I look forward to our second interview.
Well, thank you. I didn't mean it to do this topic point. We had a number of topics that were amazing. I imagine you have a supplicating system that works on a certain topic, too. I would be happy to come to something like that as well. If you have something particular that the city could help you with.
Thanks.
Thank
be
you.
In touch.
Thank you very much.
Huh? All right, well, I'll see now. This is unavoidable.
Do we need to close it on now?
That amount from what we're talking about.
Now my show.
Huh?
Now you need
okay, on to unfinished. Trustee Mao Ye is not here right now, so we're going to move on to unfinished business. First, we have Resolution 11, a resolution regarding FA members' duties. Representatives Budish, Lavin, and Vice President Quinn.
Well, if you could just start, I'll just note after hearing all the feedback about the resolution, the changes that were made were if you just look at the bylaw 6.1, see at the bottom, instead of three meetings, it's two, and then to account for larger schools like Arts and Sciences and Cal. Either respective academic dean or associate dean, and both of those schools have associate deans. I believe it's Arts and Sciences that has an associate dean for student affairs, I don't think counts as physical skills.
No.
We're just looking for like senior level administrator. Other than that, nothing else has changed. Are there any questions?
I have a question. Did you have any with the deans yet?
I'm sorry?
Did you meet with the deans?
I met with my dean, who is, fine with that. I'm doing it already with my dean. I emailed every office. They haven't gotten back to me as I sort of assumed. They probably won't.
Did you email them and told them that?
Did
you email them the text of the resolution also? Or?
I describe it as they blame me, myself, or another representative. But after these changes were made after hearing all of the feedback, so now I sort of thought that that the representatives are now going to be with this.
Okay. Was that it? Did you guys have anything else to say? Okay, the speaker's list is now open. First, we have Representative Santana.
In light of what you just said about contacting the venue and not getting a response, how, in your understanding of the difficulty of meeting with the team, actually having to get back to you? Unlike the dialogue. I'm just curious because you found it difficult to meet with all the other deans except your own, and I'm still wondering if the two meetings a semester change might be a lot.
Well, I changed from 3 to 2, so you're saying like it should decrease more? Well, here's the thing. I emailed the offices of the deans, and they're like generic. I know some of them are generic emails, like office of the dean as one of them, and then their assistants.
And plus, the email is the dean of, I'm sure, of Talent, he's due, and I've met with my dean. I mean, if you go in and make an appointment, usually you can make appointments pretty easily, and if not with the dean himself, they usually have an assistant dean. So there usually is some level of senior staff that you can meet with pretty easily.
Vice President Boxer.
Oh, sorry. That was the same thing. I mean, I thought that the reason why we had tabled this for so long was because it was clear that the deans of the smaller schools were somewhat responsive to the three of you, but of the bigger schools, it was uncertain. I thought that was sort of why we...
Well, no, we tabled them for either the agenda was too long. We never tabled them.
I ruled that it wouldn't be placed on unfinished business until they contacted their deans and the chair. Each constituent dean. The chair rules their emails contact though because they describe the content of the resolution. So,
no, I'm
but
not.
That's, but that's you're right. We can still. I mean, I understand what you mean.
Yeah, I guess my concern again, like I think that this is a great resolution. I guess I have the same concern that I had when this first came up, and I think that you guys were certainly proving my point, which is that it's very difficult, regardless of if you say that you're on the student body or whatever. I was hoping that given the time period that you had, that maybe you would actually have like more success.
I didn't mean that. I emailed them once. I didn't follow up after that. I mean, I could very well go to the office and meet with the senior level administrator or associate dean. I don't foresee that being a problem at all. So I didn't really follow up with that. After that email, I just didn't think it was necessary. I thought changing it from 3 to 2 and then, as you discussed, not necessarily with the dean, for example, the Arts and Sciences, the College of Arts and Sciences, that would be difficult. I thought that the representatives could then handle that themselves. But, obviously that's up to the assembly to decide.
Vice President Coombs.
I asked a question, when we were just going back and forth in the question and answer session about this. It seemed kind of like a throwaway. It was a question of, is there anything that prevents anybody in the student assembly from going to see a dean anytime? And obviously the answer is no. So my question to you, in my opinion, if we're actually going to put something in the charter, it seems like it would be something that's absolutely necessary for an SA representative to do a good job. Do you guys feel it's absolutely necessary to our jobs as SA representatives to discuss things with our deans at least twice a semester? How does that fit into our larger role as student representatives and people with legislative authority in the Department of Campus Life in particular.
Sure. Well, you're right. Anybody can go and meet with their dean or associate dean whenever they'd like. Traditionally, it doesn't happen. I don't really see that happening a lot, except for certain representatives. And I feel that I have gained so much more of a connection with my school administration and my constituency through this. So I sort of wanted to give the idea to everyone else and hope they would use this resource as well. So I definitely think it'd be advantageous to do this and bridge that gap, which I think there is, you know, a gap there.
And also, I view our role as student assembly representatives to be a representative of students to the university. And I think one way we can do this, in addition to the university administration, is to do this to the individual colleges. I think we have a closer connection to our constituents than the deans have, and we can help bridge that gap.
Representative Salem, I'm sorry, Seth. Okay, I really hope someone calls the question fairly soon. I think that they've been sort of around the table for about 3 weeks without this resolution. I believe it to be relatively simple. I think it's just something that encourages and further structures the role of an SA representative. It's really, really easy to meet with administrative guidance. I mean, a great example of what Elon set up, he, you know, called the vice provost, set up this meeting, you know, a short while later, 15 of them go to meetings, having a great discussion. We go to a university that has an administration that loves to talk with us. We don't go to Columbia. I mean, like, people love, our administrators are very acceptable, like, well, they're very easy to talk to. I've never had a problem. And yeah, email says it's slow, but you can just, you know, like Ryan said, go in, make an appointment, or even call. You have someone's calendar. I've never, you know, other than perhaps the most senior administration, there are no obstacles like that. So, I mean, if you look at it, there's no consequence if you don't make the two meetings. I mean, I feel like we're talking about a $10 million allocation here. Let's just pass the resolution.
Before you yield your time, I'd like to remind you that you can motion to call the question.
Okay.
Using the last 5th of my time, I'd like to motion I'd like to move the previous question. Thank you.
Second.
Consent. Okay. It's going to take a hand vote. All in favor of calling the question, raise your hand.
It would slow down democracy.
The motion fails with 15 votes. Two thirds. Two thirds of the 16. Yeah. Two-thirds of the voting assembly of 23, which is 16 votes, so it fails with 15 votes.
Sorry,
I didn't explain it. I'm sorry, two-thirds of those present. Let me count them. Motion to re-vote. Hold on. Let me consult with that really quickly.
Do.
Okay, my apologies. It's two-thirds of the voting members present. All right. Okay, you guys didn't understand the question? Okay, I'm sorry.
Absolutely.
All right.
I have no idea what was going on.
Okay, I'm sorry. Representative Self motion to call the question. Basically, that is a motion to vote. So we were voting to end debate and just vote on it right now. Okay.
Cool.
Okay, so now we're going to vote on the motion to call the previous question. Okay? Hand vote. Everyone raise your hands if you're in favor of calling the previous question. And that actually looks like it's unanimous. Okay, I'm sorry. Just for the moment, it's been a revelation here. But the motion passes. Sir, I'm sorry. Are there any community members that would like to speak on that? Please state your name here for the record.
So there's a couple of quick comments to make about this, and I support the idea of Caliban's resolution. I emailed Ryan about it, and I helped him make some changes to it. So I totally support the idea. I just have a couple of reservations about the form it's in or the way it's perceived, just so we can make it an effective resolution, in my opinion, so it actually affects the charter change. One, the issue that you guys brought up and that Calvin brought up about having no consequences. That's something that we've had a problem with a lot in both the charter and the standing rules. And when we amended the charter last semester, when Mark and I sat down and went over the standing rules and presented it to you guys. We took out a lot of things that had no consequences because there was no point in having them in there if they had no consequences. That being said, this type of requirement has always been found in the standing rules in the past, not in the charter. And I suggested that if you place it in the standing rules instead, because every new assembly could reevaluate that and move forward from there. The problem with having this bylaw is this, and this is why I actually want to make sure that it's an effective resolution. And I'll read you what the charter says. It says, the bylaws are typed in the text of the charter for clarity and based on operating rules adopted by the student assembly that relate to itself as an organization, like where it explains what confidentiality is, just an explanation. It says, bylaws and approval by the student assembly only are not part of the charter. It doesn't not make it part of the charter. If you go to Article 2.3, which talks about charter amendment, bylaw 2.3a, which explains how it works, but I was wondering, well, who all thinks the proof besides that says, it says just.
I am ready to extend that second time in a minute.
I wasn't keeping time, but he's only at 36 seconds since I began, so.
It's like a long time.
You're
the section is affected by this section. The president will detail verbal report within 30 days, blah, blah, blah. So basically, apparently, the university president has the right to review any of the charter amendments we made, which doesn't include bylaws. My concern with that is that while I don't respect the fact that you guys tried to contact all of this, my concern is I don't want it to have something that has, and even though promise that it is, you guys just have to get contact with them. They go up and say, you know, these go with the minutes to go up and say, well, look, you know, arts and sciences or Cal or these other things never go back, so, you know, why are we okay if you don't have to see this on the chart? So, I don't know, that's not my reservation about something like this. The charter is just, one, having more consequences, two, if something that's already happening and not all the reps can do it, why make it something that's permanently within the charter? At least make it something, it's something that can be reviewed every year, and how close is necessary. While I totally respect the idea that this is noble, I also really feel very strong about the charter and the fact that we should be very careful to what amendments are placed into it. This is something that has evolved over time. That's about all.
Okay, well, there are any other community members that would like to speak? Okay. Clerk, please call the roll. Oh, I'm sorry. Did you guys want 2 minutes to respond?
I really wasn't concerned with the consequences. It wasn't a priority of mine, just because I think representatives would get a lot out of this and would want to meet with the dean. And again, that just wasn't a priority of mine. But this seems, appropriate. And with that, Representative Levin inclusion, I would like to change it. So the friendly amendment would be in the SA standing rules.
Well, if you make an amendment now, then you're essentially throwing this away. I mean, you can't make an amendment now, basically, because we already ended the debate. It's out of order. All right. Did you guys want to say anything else? You still have about a minute. Okay. Clerk, please call the roll. Hold on. Are you asking that the vote come back to you?
Yeah.
Or, okay.
Yes.
Yeah. That's what
everyone
else.
Yeah.
You don't want to pull that one?
Representative Hartman's vote? He still needs, no, he said pass. He wanted the vote to come back to him, basically. He wanted to pass for now, but now he's registering his vote.
I'll vote yes.
Okay, and with that, that's 13 yeses, 1 no, and 1 abstention. Oh, I'm sorry.
No.
Okay, was there anyone else who did not have an opportunity to vote? Okay, I have 15 yeses to 3 noes to 1 abstention.
I have 15 to 5 to 1. Either way,
yeah.
I have 15 to 5 to 1.
Is that correct?
Yeah.
15, okay, the resolution fails. Resolution needed 16 votes of the total voting membership, which is 23, so the resolution. What? Yes.
If you're voting.
You're right. I vote. I said, well. I vote yes. Okay, the resolution passes. Thanks for that correction, Mr. Hadbury. The resolution passes with 16 votes. Thank you.
Strong arm corner.
Did that class
resolution? Not anymore. Now we have resolution 12, resolution regarding the academic bill of rights referendum, with Representative Salem, Steve Lickman.
I motion to table this until after Trustee Mao has been given his opportunities.
Thank you, and we're just going to move on along with Trustee Mao now.
Hello, everyone. First of all, I want to apologize to you guys about the serious mistakes I have made in the past semester. Of course, I have a course at your meeting time, and if I fail in this course, I will definitely be kicked out of Cornell. they're serious. And that course, actually, if you absent once, you will fail the course. So attendance comes about 50% of the course. So if you do not show once, you will fail. So one thing I also want to apologize is that I think some of you have seen my article called Chromic Cornell Future about Course Evaluation. I know you have some plan that was turned down by the senior faculty and the faculty senate. Now I want to introduce, I've been thinking for a long time, and I would like to introduce a new idea I call the student list. It is a word managed totally by students, transparent to students. I call it the surprise of the student, by the student, and for the student. You know, there are many teaching awards in this campus, but does any of you know how the professor gave that award? No, right? They have some secret ingredient in some kind of decision, which you don't know, right? But who should judge the teaching quality? It is us, right? I told the president that we said we want to use the best undergraduate institution in the world. But everybody thinks that, right? Everybody claims they have excellent faculty, something like that. So my idea is that to create a student-managed teaching award. I have shown you guys some article written by me called Of the Student, By the Student, For the Student. It says that, the article says that the founder of this prize comes from part of our tuition, right? Now I have some update for that. I think it's better for the university to raise some funds, I mean raise some endowment to this prize. I have spent a lot of time working with the university authority about that. Why? Because if we set up part of a tuition, might call an extra round of three rising. Right? Because actually we don't know. It's a very new information. We don't know how three exists, right? So recently I have talked with the vice president of Alumni Affairs and Development about this idea. And I told him that if he did have this award, I would donate all my current assets to that award. To start that award. I'm serious. I'm very, very serious. I told him I currently have only have $3,000. And I yeah, that's a big money for me, you know, I have a diamond and I have a wife. But I'm serious. So currently he considered that, and I will talk to approval Martin next week, I think, sometime like that. I just want to express the idea. I don't know whether I will succeed this time. I will ask you for advice. I think if I cannot make it, whether it is available to ask for petitions on the campus. I think the thing that the reason that we lose the code evaluation website first is to provide both defense. It's not only providing carrot, but also providing kick to back to members, right? This is the first thing that they don't want to speak, right? They don't want to speak. The second thing is that if there is only a resolution by us, we cannot say this is we cannot say that everybody wants that, right? So I have been thinking to write a petition and collect signatures from student body. So I told them, I will donate $3,000 and collect 3,000 signatures. I have an estimate that me alone I can get about 800. But I need your help. Help me get more signatures. I think students will really like this idea. And if we get 3,000 signatures, so I don't think anybody, it's easy to crush me, right? Or crash 90 members of student assembly, but it's difficult to crash 3,000 students, right?
Right.
So I just asked you for advice, whether you think it is a good idea to ask a petition. I have already designed the form, and I have write an article called "Ask the Student by the Student and for the Student." And I have also talked to several very rich faculty members about whether they want to donate to this award. Because, you know, university has lots of initiatives to make this on the top of the agenda. We need a big push from student body. So that's my presentation. I would like to know your ideas of my plan. Do you think it is good, or I would like to know any comments by you?
Just to set the tone for this conversation about the 3,000 signatures, when we run for student assembly, we have to get 50 signatures, but I think typically we get closer to 100. So that's 2,300 right there. It's just something for everybody to think about.
Oh, but they are overlapping.
What was that?
Is there some overlap?
Yes, there is, but still, I'm saying 2,300 signatures. Vice President Bachman.
Now, thank you very much for coming. I think that you are a boost to us. This is the only beginning of the meeting for you, but we've already been here for like an hour and a half, so thanks for giving some energy. I guess my question, and I brought this up when we first heard about this idea, I really can't speak for other majors. I'm in arts and science, and I want to do arts and rep. And I know that like half of my history professors have like 8 different grants and titles and fellowships that they have had bestowed on them, and really everyone has heard of them. Like they're very famous and renowned in some sense or another, and they already have. They're most of them are pretty tenured, and they already have like a myriad of different titles and awards that they've been given. So I'm just this probably would be quite a bit of effort on our behalf, and I think it's a very nice idea. But I guess my question is sort of what about it would really, it's going to be so much effort for us, and sounds like it kind of would be an initiative that each of us would have to take very seriously in some way. What sort of prestige would be attached to it that would be different from, I guess another question along with that is sort of what about this award can you say would the branch would maybe prevent someone who already has 10 or 11 of these different titles from getting, just another one on the laundry list? How would it benefit up-and-coming professors, ones that not as many people have been exposed to or heard of before?
Okay, I know lots of professors have all kinds of titles, honors, prestigious, but none of them were given by students, right?
Right.
They're important for number. If you are good at research, you will definitely get tenure and get chair professor or provided to people. Okay. Yeah, if you like me, you call me better. Okay, so, but none of the award, I mean, this honor was given by students, right? I think the vice presidential battle takes students into account, but the final decision was made by faculty members. So, if he had made that honor, he would not automatically take student honor, right?
Right.
No students give that honor. So I know there are some very good professors and some very bad professors. Some good professors always care. Some bad professors don't care, right? But most of them are in the middle, right? If we give some honor, they will choose us more seriously, right?
That's the theory.
I think you can put it into practice. And also, there are some very good lectures and some very excellent faculties, right? They are not eligible to lots of honors, right? So we should honor them. If they give us good education, right? And also, every year we pay high tuition here, right? Although university actually subsidize us, but we have at least share our education cost, right? So we should have some right to pay at least even a little bit funding on this university, where it goes to, right? That's the point of our high mission. Right?
Vice President, quickly.
I applaud Trustee Mao's efforts here and his ideas. I think gaining signatures is not a hard task, especially since there are 23 of us. We have numerous committees with 6 or 7 members on each, and I think if we work together on that, I think it would be a great idea. The first thing that I would do, though, is I think with the resolution that was just passed, Resolution 11, I think we should go to our constituencies and see what our deans feel about this, too. You mentioned that the dean of the faculty, Charlie Walcott, is for this.
Yeah, I think possibly. It's funny that he don't strongly agree with my idea, but his wife supported his idea. Because his wife is a lecturer.
I think that's more important too. I just think it's a thing that constituent representatives within the colleges should look into, and I think that if we really positioned ourselves, we could get a lot of signatures with this, and I think it could be very effective. And I'd be willing to assist Trustee Mao and anyone else. I think it'd be a great initiative.
I just afraid that if you do something very small, maybe this idea will be crashed at the beginning, and it's almost impossible to rewrite it again, right?
Right.
If it has been crashed at the beginning, it's hard to say, oh, we want this idea again. There might be more struggle between us and some other constituencies around campus. If we begin something big, at least that if the president or provost should officially address the question, I think technically they cannot say it's not a good idea. So we need an open address from them, right? They cannot say that we really think it's a bad idea. But if we do something small, maybe they can delay it. And by, maybe your enthusiasm will wear, and maybe one day my enthusiasm will wear. Well, I don't think so.
Right. What kind of time frame are you looking at for this? Do you want to have it done by the end of the semester or during the...
I really think this is, if we want to make it...
Well, the time frame I was talking about with getting signatures and mobilizing and getting that to the administration, would you like to see that in the next couple of weeks or...?
I think it's better for us to see that in a couple of weeks,
right?
Because otherwise it cannot be achieved by our candidate, right?
No, I agree.
And maybe next generation of student assembly, they should do that from the very beginning, right?
Absolutely. Okay, that's all I have.
Representative Self.
Okay, I just had a question. How do you think that on the issue of course evaluation, if students wanting to add information,
that help them choose courses. Like, for example, I took a nutrition course this semester, and I'm not very good at, you know, very hard science prelims. And I just asked one of the students whether or not the course, you know, had a very difficult prelim. And she told me it was an easy course, but she was also very good at science. So I think students, or that represents a, you know, silly example, but students want to have more information from those students about how courses are, how the teaching style is like, what the workload is like. So are there any other initiatives you thought of besides this? Oh, what the way you think we could keep this course evaluation idea alive besides these faculty awards?
Yeah, I agree that we should be doing more. Because currently I have seen the course evaluation. I can share with the data is not of very high quality. Because actually most of the students don't know if we will not have any impact. So they're not treating it seriously. So the first step is to let students treat it seriously by this award. We begin small, right? We say that, oh, by this award, students will take it more seriously, right? And we will have better data, right, for course evaluation. And then we put again our initiative, again, I mean, with the new background information that we want the course evaluation to be public again, like the University of Tanzania, right? But currently, I told you, I have some course evaluation with strict 1, and some of it is strict 5, and some in a zigzag 4, and some more funny one, you can see a few interesting pictures in the connection. It's so funny, you know, so that's a justification for, I think, for faculty members, that they don't want to publish course evaluation. So first, we create this award. After that, we have high quality data, and we told professors the data is much, much better than regular books. Professor.com.
How do you want to link the award to, like, course evaluation?
Okay, this award is totally based on course evaluation, like an election. Right, so we have 100 percent right in this award. So if, like, if you are at high school, you will be on the dean's list, right? Is that
true? No.
I'm kidding. But professors who have some high quality evaluation should at least be put on student list. That's it, right? So maybe some we can divide it into several categories. There are some very good ones goes to student list and with money. And some of them only have all but no money, right? And we can have total like some kind of award ceremony during this call, right? In this call. And a huge reception. We can also hold that reception. As long as the vice president can raise some money and after he gets the approval of the provost Martin, I will go talk to provost Martin very soon. But plus, I will tell her again that I will donate my total effort. That don't work. And I also promise that if they create the Chinese award, I will every year I will donate $1,000. For my small stipend, because that really is your half Cornell, and then you can Cornell's future. And because if you take students right seriously, you can get huge donations in the future. They spend lots of money lobbying current alumni for money, but I told them it's easier to ask the future alumni for money. Right?
Vice President Greenberg.
I think not.
Oh, okay. Liaison Walsh. No? Okay. We are on the gold bar?
Yeah. World TV on the student list, right? I'm here. Oh, so you have to
go. Okay. Vice President Botkin.
I just had a question, and I know that the GPSA question is here also, so we can't respond to this, but did you ever think about maybe first trying to implement this with grad students? Just because this is much, like, I don't know, maybe smaller pool, or are grad students involved with this? Like, are they also rating the professors, or is this just entirely an undergraduate?
I also think about graduate students, I think.
This is something for graduate students and undergraduates to be
able to do? Yeah, we can say some quota, like maybe according to what I think 30% of students here at Panera are graduate students, right? So 30% of the graduate courses can be on the student list, then 70% are on undergraduate courses, right? Actually, there are two different forms, right?
Is 30 to 70?
Yeah, we can whatever. We can also come to the how many courses Are you graduate studies, right? And
so, in that 30%, is that graduating like taking classes with professors or?
For courses, which is bigger base, then 5 students. Because if you have 5 students, then you can take all straight 5, right? And you will automatically experience with that. Actually, that's fair.
Okay, so my question, I guess, then, you really can come forward and answer this if you feel like you but I guess if this is very small percentage of graduate students who are taking classes with professors or whatever percentage it is, it's obviously a lot less than undergraduate. Would you think about maybe starting this course with the graduate students, like doing a program like this and seeing how much participation it is, how well, like just because for the undergraduate community to get involved, it's like huge numbers of people like really getting on board with this. So I'm just wondering if the whole project started a little bit smaller scale, if that makes sense even, you know, just sort of like a sample population. Please, yes. Can you give me the microphone? I'm sorry.
We're going to graduate. There's not a lot of grads that actually actively take classes.
Okay.
They graduate and take classes just for 2 or 3 years for their PhD and then the ABD and the implementation research. And that could mean actually they would need to be in the academic area. Also, I'd say that graduate students have a really different relationship to their professors and advisors because they work much closer with them, either in a lab or in any other kind of research situation on an educational basis. So the kind of the mentor-mentee relationship is qualitatively quite different than I think the undergraduate situation. Now that said, I should mention that we spoke to the dean of the graduate school last week, who mentioned that one of the big initiatives of the grad school coming up is precisely on the sort of mentor-mentee-advisor relationship, improving it both on the student side and the faculty side. So I could see that this could be something the graduate students could be involved in, but it wouldn't be a good sort of pilot first group to do that with. It's not quite the same as the undergraduate experience, although it might be that our course evaluation could be into the professor ones. Also remember that grad classes would tend to be smaller, 5 people in the room of prof, as opposed to 500 people in the room of prof. It's quite a different experience. But I would say this is having some kind of parallel on the graduate student side to, our course advisor kind of award.
Most of the teaching problems appear at the undergraduate side because faculty prefer to teach graduate courses than undergraduate courses because graduate students can finally end up become their research assistant. So I know there were very favored bad courses at Cornell and all of them are undergraduate. I heard that the professor always offered to his class. I did not want to mention his name. Did anybody take his class? Professor always been offered to his class.
Don't put this in
strike Janet. Janet was on the street.
That's another point you make in that which is that graduate students often teach your classes. And that can either be a very positive thing because the graduate student is a very good instructor. It could be a negative thing because the teacher and the professor who has responsibility for the course passes it on to the grad students and leaves them hanging and the grad students themselves don't have the resources or knowledge to bring to the class. So those kinds of things could impact evaluation either way. And there could actually be a really strong point for an undergraduate supportive teaching assistantship award if you have really good TA that you think really deserve recognition. So those are evaluations that don't go into any large diving. But I did want to speak to another issue. This is coming out of being a graduate student sitting here at your meeting. I've had some experience in an undergrad and teaching institution. Mel and I were actually talking at UBC a while ago. And UBC, has their student-run faculty teaching award as well, which I want to run. And that's not done through evaluation. That's done through nominating. Students will get together and nominate one of their favorite professors. And then professors and students alike will write letters in support of the nomination. I don't know if there's a substantial award associated with that prize. Probably not. It could just be actually, the fact that you get to say you have a choice teaching award on your resume. But I wanted to ask you specifically then, why is sort of this model of doing it through evaluation, doing it with a cash prize, or have you considered other kinds of models that are available at different undergraduate institutions for doing teacher awards, like students? Because there's a number of them out there.
that end up being quite contiguous to the local community. I'm wondering why this particular model, or have you seen any other type of things that you would you'd like to see from other institutions?
Actually, my only plan is to make a website to make code evaluation available. So this actually is a condensed version of the plan, so that's the reason I also have this teaching award, because I want to use more. And finally, we reach a word to have code evaluation published. So this is one of my campaign programs. Campaign programs. I have seen something in other universities, like student nominated, and it's immediately decided. But I clearly know that's very biased. For example, if students nominate and the department chairman needs to write later, right? So if the faculty member happens to have a very good chairman, right, he will spend 2 days to write a letter. Sometimes some chairman only spend 10 to 20 minutes to write a letter. So finally, the teacher may lose the word called irresponsible chairman. So student effort finally has went only because the chairman don't care the teacher very much. So I have an example of lots of models. I think the one I have just mentioned to you applied in a white for dental battle. There's a white teaching model.
I hate to do this, but I'm going to end the discussion right now. It's getting late, and we have a couple of things that we want to get to, but I will contact you to try to organize a meeting between representatives on the Assembly and other interested parties so we can talk about this further, because obviously it's a hot topic.
Okay,
right?
Thank you.
But thank you so much for coming.
Okay, thank you, and please for keeping me for my full English.
Yeah. Oh, no problem.
Steven.
There's been a motion to move resolutions 12 and 13, or I'm sorry,
no.
Table resolutions 12 and 13 until.
No.
The motion, resolutions 12 and 13 until next week, so that we can discuss resolution 15. I'm sorry, until 2 weeks from now, so we can discuss resolution 15. Is there a second?
Second.
Is there any dissent? Okay, motion passes. So, on to new business, Resolution 15, Resolution Regarding Transportation Committee. Oh, it's 6:29. We don't have to.
This is one of my ideas that I came up with last year. As a Cornell student, when we try to go to like the Syracuse airport in the New York, done that, or even to go to New York, the transportation cost itself costs a lot of money. And if you can't afford to go to Pacific Airport, you have to. The next best option is Syracuse Airport. But right now, there's only one service that I'm aware of, and Pacific Airlines and the and the service to go from here to Syracuse is about $60 one way, about $95 round trip. These numbers vary a little bit around that range. And then to go through Short Line is $40 one way to New York and $80 round trip. And I came up with this idea to explain when I was organizing a trip with class council to go to Darien Lake. And when we chartered a bus, for 50 students, it cost about $1,000 for the day to take them up to Darien Lake, which is about 2.5 hours away, and back. So that was about $20 just for the transportation. And if we would, and class council didn't pay for the bus itself. We put up the funds initially to charter the bus, but then we had the students like confirmation, and then we got their money. And they paid for the bus. So, like every student that went on the trip paid $20 for transportation, and then that money went right back into our account. So we didn't lose any money for transportation for the Darien Lake trip, and it was only $20 to go all the way, a half hour away and back. Now, Syracuse is only an hour away, and for round trip, we're paying $90. And I thought we could find a better, more efficient way for our students to go from here to Syracuse because right now it's being controlled by one company, Pacific Airlines Company. So I wanted to create like a transportation committee. Like all these ideas that I'm jumping around and stuff that I came up with like last year. And I want to do some more research and I want to create an ad hoc committee to look more into this. On the back of your resolution, it's just a list of some of the charters that CU transition companies list that class council uses. Approximately, we get a charter bus of about 48 people without the bus. It varies based on the time of year. So we would just go through this. We're buying the best service, but I can kind of stress too that the student assembly wouldn't be paying for the student's transportation. We would just be offering them a service, and we're finding the best price, we're making it cheaper. And I want to create an ad hoc committee to do that.
Vice President Boxer.
I think that this looks great. I think you did a lot of great research. I just want to know if you're amenable for if I would motion to do whatever, like if anyone has any questions or whatever for you or serious changes to the resolution, you can email them to me.
Motion to suspend the standing.
Wait, hold on. Do you want to add this?
Yeah, no, I would just say, like, to still vote on this, like, next, when it comes up on unfinished business, like in next week or 2 weeks or whatever, but just to move past this right now and go into executive session. Would you be okay with that? Or
yeah.
Do you,
okay. Well,
there was
a motion to suspend the standing rules, move resolution 15 to business of the day, and call the previous question. All in one fell swoop. Is there a second?
Second.
Is there any dissent? Okay. So now we're voting on this resolution. Basically, for everybody, what just happened was we moved this to unfinished business and. Now we're voting on it. We just voted to vote on it. Did everybody understand what we're voting on this time? Okay. All right.
Can I motion for unanimous?
Yeah.
For unanimous.
Are there any community members that would like to speak very quickly? I will give you 30 seconds each.
Just real quick, that's a good idea. Just 2 things that I know I've had to travel to Syracuse before. One of them, I know there's a company, I forget their name, I tried to research it last night when I went out of the reserve, that goes 1 to 7 a.m. and 1 to 1 to 5 p.m. from Syracuse to Transportation Center there to the downtown airline, to the downtown bus center, and it's $12 each way. I forget the exact name of the company, so it's a major
point of order, this is somewhere.
Well, it's the community member's time to speak, so they can. He's speaking on the creation of the committee. Go ahead. Hurry up. Let's finish.
Second thing is, I was just kind of the UA Transportation Committee or something along those lines. So I think, you know, this is a really, really good idea to be able to support behind the community.
Thanks. Okay, and 30 seconds to respond. Vince.
I also just want to say that I felt this would be a very public way for the NSA to get involved with the students because a lot of students don't see the NSA doing anything, and students be able to see, oh, they're offering transportation for me to get to the airport really cheap, and this is a way to get our image out and to look really good to the students. It's one of those rare opportunities.
Okay, thank you. Clerk, please.
I'm motion for unanimous. Second.
No, though. We're doing it by roll call. Clerk, please call the roll.
Point of information, was there a motion for a hand vote? This is like a formal, can we do a formal hand vote? It's not having a motion for a hand vote.
Second. There's been a second. So there's been a motion to hand vote and there's been a second. Is there any dissent? Seeing none, we will do this by. There's one. Oh, okay. Seeing no dissent, we're going to do this by hand vote. All in favor of this resolution, please raise your hands. Okay, all opposed, please raise your hands.
Right.
All opposed. Okay, this resolution passes unanimously.
Motion to adjourn the meeting.
No.
Oh, wait, okay.
This motion, resolution passes unanimously. Thank you, Representative Hartman. There's been a motion from Vice President Greenberg to move into executive session. Is there a second?
Second.
Is there any dissent?
Sit down, officer.
Okay, meeting is now in executive session. Any non-essay members, please leave the room. Thank you all for coming. We're going to adjourn.